Kale and Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
We just got done ripping Harvard and discussing all the dastardly deeds that Trump has gotten in store for them. But so this hour, we're hoping we're going to get Charlie Gasparino should be calling in this hour. Charlie Gasparino is a senior correspondent for Fox News. He writes some great stuff in the New York Post. I was just saying a little bit ago, it's one of my favorite newspapers to read. It's an easy read. It gets to all the everything that's going on in the day, and it has great headlines. So it's Charlie does some great articles there. They got a lot of good pundits on there, no doubt. And we're going to cover a few different things with them. And let me think. Is cool. I'm getting something, Jimmy. What do we got? I see something coming up on the board. Ah, Jimmy. Here we go. I'm seeing Charlie up on the board. So give me 1 second. I was just doing the intro to Charlie, so that's perfect. Let's bring him on the air.
How you guys doing?
Charlie, Tom Hazelby, how are you? Welcome to Kale and Company on this Memorial Day in Philadelphia. How are you, sir?
Everything's great. How are you?
Good. What are you doing this Memorial Day? You're always working. You're like the best compliment my father could ever say about someone. He'd call them a hustler. A hustler, and like not a hustler in the bad way. And they're like, oh, that kid's a hustler. That's the best compliment he could pay you. And I see that with you. I mean, from Fox News to the New York Post, you're writing your book, Go Woke, Grow Broke. You do a lot of different things, Charlie. I really respect that. And that's why I said you're a hustler.
I never, you're only as good as your last story, as I had a professor once told me, and a journalism professor. And, you know, that's kind of the way I approach this thing. I mean, this is an ever-evolving business. That's part of the good part, that it's always changing, right? There's always new news.
Yeah.
And it's good stuff to keep on top of. But your job is to stay on top of it, not to say, oh, I broke that story, let me forget everything else.
No, you got to. So, they want the next one.
You know, it's an insatiable appetite that you're feeding.
Yeah, it's not like what I've been an entrepreneur. You always wanted to have a recurring revenue business. And once you got it set it up, you just can wait. And the business you're in or the business I'm in right now doing this is like, you know, once the show's over, the article's done. Okay, what's next? You know, always on to the next thing.
And the good thing about it is that there is a next thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really nice about it. There is definitely a next thing.
Yeah.
There is definitely a way to, for example, it's Sherry Redstone. I wrote about last week that she's on the verge of settling her lawsuit with Donald Trump over the contested 60 Minutes Kamala Harris interview. Well, guess what? We got to get the settlement now.
Yeah, so you know what? That's a great article, by the way. And if you want to read Charlie's article on Paramount, and they're being sued. Trump is suing them for like $50 billion or whatever. But the CEO is looking to settle because she's got another deal she wants to do. I found that article real interesting. What kind of frame it for us?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So Paramount, which is a huge studio, right? It was created by her father, the great deal maker, media deal maker, Sumner Redstone. Was once a profitable huge company, and I started covering the internal battles when Sumner started to essentially kind of lose it, right?
He was
old, was dating very
young.
Yeah,
the young girlfriend.
Women.
Yeah,
it was a crazy situation. Because there was a lawsuit over this. The young women were inserting themselves into the family business, so to speak. In comes Sherry Redstone, his daughter, and essentially took over the company took it over. And then, interesting enough, there was another battle that was set up with the guy running CBS, who was the king of all media at the time. Remember, Paramount was essentially controlled by by the Redstones,
right?
There were two subsidiaries. There was the Viacom subsidiary. There was the CBS subsidiary. Her, to consolidate power, she wanted to combine it all into one company, and that one company became Paramount. And so she basically went to war with the guy running the CBS subsidiary, who was the king of all media. His name was Les Moonves.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember.
Yeah, he got in trouble, too. The Me Too movement took him out.
He got in trouble on the Me Too stuff. But in the middle of that, he was trying to separate out CBS and make it a separate company, you know, pay her, you know, sell stock, pay her. He had this whole elaborate scheme, which was destined to fail, but it was probably the right thing to do. He could have monetized CBS at that point probably for $50 billion just alone. She probably should have sold the whole thing for $70 billion at that point. They would have had some buyer somewhere to buy it, you know, maybe a big tech company. I mean, who knows? But be that as it may, she put it all together. Moonves got chased out. She becomes the new queen of all media. And in the years since, and we're talking 2019 to 2018 to now,
yeah,
the value of that thing has just imploded. It imploded so much that, you know, what she initially had, which was about a sort of net worth of $50 billion, is now worth around $2
billion. Wow.
What's left of her nest egg from her father. And that's why she's desperate to sell the thing now to the only willing buyer, which is this thing called Skydance, which is an independent studio run by David Ellison, who's the son of Larry Ellison, the Oracle founder. And David wants to build a big media property. He's got the money. Remember, his own man is worth.
Yeah, he's tons.
We're talking $250 billion.
Yeah.
He's one of the top five richest men in the world. Oracle is a huge company. Larry Ellison, we should point out, is a close friend of Donald Trump. And you know why is she selling? Why she has to sell for so little is just the problems that are going on at every broadcast company. Cord cutting, the business, the sort of the metrics of the business have really collapsed.
Big time.
Part of it was you know, problems with streaming is expensive. You know, Paramount Plus is not making money. I think there's only one streaming service that makes money. I could be wrong. Maybe it's two, but the one I keep that's in my head is Warner Brothers Discovery. It doesn't make a lot.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So she has to sell. Now, here's where it gets really interesting.
Yep.
Incomes. Now, the Trump people believe at all these networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, they all carry water for the Democratic Party.
Yep.
When they were about to get in power, they promised that the fairness doctrine, which is known as something that controls public airways, I believe your radio show is probably governed by the fairness doctrine. That means we can't really curse.
There's
a public interest rule. Your news, not opinion, not what I'm saying, your news program has to be unbiased. Now, no one really enforces it, but, you know, Trump, before he was elected, did sue CBS over that Kamala Harris interview, saying it violated essentially parts of the fairness doctrine. This is like when the Biden administration was in, and because they edited out her word salad, he claimed.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. No, was she the nominee at the time she did that interview, or was this before she was the nominee?
No, she was the nominee. Trump would contend that that had damages because it might have swayed some people to vote for her because they made her sound smarter. This is what he contends. It was a 60-minute CBS 60 Minutes interview.
No, I remember the interview, but in the outcome was they did edit it, correct?
Yeah, they always edit too, but they claim, and I'm not totally disagreeing with them, that it was inconsequential, not material.
Okay, there's some gray area here.
Trump did too. 60 Minutes is famous for editing. What they probably should have done right at the time, because this was at the heat of the campaign, they should have probably just released the full tape or just released the transcript. They would have just done it, but they wouldn't release the transcript. So everybody started thinking, oh, what are they hiding, right?
Mm-hmm.
As it may, Trump gets elected. There's a new FCC chair. His name is Brendan Sullivan, Brendan Carr, excuse me. Brendan Carr comes in and says, you know, I'm going to start enforcing the public interest rule on FCC, on broadcast licenses. Usually you start, you have real power over those, over that, enforcing that public interest rule. When, guess what? You need to get your license renewed when there's a merger.
Right.
Well, guess what? Sherry Redstone wants a merge with Skydance, and CBS is part of that. Well, so then he throttles the deal. He opens the investigation up on the grounds that it was a conservative group that filed the charge. And this goes, it's separate from the Trump lawsuit, but it's virtually the same allegation. As such, a conservative legal group said that CBS doctored the tape, so to speak. And Sherry Redstone's payday right now is wickedly in jeopardy. Now, the question is, will she settle? Now, others have settled because Trump members suing a lot of people. He sued ABC over George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, and he won.
Well, he didn't win. They paid him.
Yeah, they paid him. You're right. They settled. Let me ask you a question, Charlie. So I'm just like lining this up in my head. So Redstone, with her Paramount, she needs to do the deal. So she wants to settle because Trump's FCC has to approve the deal, right? Like, he's kind of in the catbird seat here.
Absolutely. And that's what the whole story is about.
Oh, my God.
So now here's the pressure on her, and I reported this out. Members of her board are saying that you can't settle. It amounts to extortion. This is a frivolous case. She's turning around saying, well, it might be frivolous, but everybody settles frivolous case just to...
Yeah,
just
cases to are settled all the time.
Just to limit the legal liability. Bob Iger settled a frivolous case, right?
Yeah.
The George Stephanopoulos really commits slander. I mean, you know, what he said about Donald Trump was wrong. It was a tantamount to slander. I mean, who knows?
Right.
It was a characterization of what Trump allegedly did, which I believe he did nothing, but that's a whole other story. In the E. Jean Carroll matter, remember the woman who claims many years later that he forced himself on her in the middle of Bergdorf Goodman?
Yeah, in the dressing room.
In the dressing room, which to me sounds just, you know, fantastical, that Donald Trump, one of the most famous people in the world, just walks into a store, no one recognizes him, and he throws someone in the dressing room.
Oh,
but in any event,
crazy.
So the jury said that was sexual assault, not rape. And this is what I'm going by memory here. And Stephanopoulos called it rape, and then they had to settle.
Yeah.
Okay, then they settled.
Yep.
They settled for similar reasons, you know, broadcast law, you know, who needs it, right? You have all these law firms that want to do business in Washington and need access to the White House. They're settling too.
Yeah.
Like Trump is saying X, Y, and Z, you got to do this. So there's precedent here, according to Sherry, but there are members of her board that are saying if we settle, you know, maybe we're held liable because we gave into an extortion attempt. You know, will there be a DA somewhere, in San Francisco that brings the case, you know, that we gave into an extortion attempt that's illegal? So that's where the battle is. I hear the Trump people are telling them that, you know, you better pay up soon or else we're going to war, total war. And now they're not threatening the FCC stuff because it's supposed to be separate, right?
Yeah.
But it is hovering out there. Like, if you don't do one, the other might come and bite you in the rear end.
She's in a tough spot. Redstone.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Because what's left of her net worth is not a lot.
Yeah.
You know, she boosted billions and tens of billions of dollars. Now, she didn't, like, spend it all. I don't think she understood what was going on in the business. And, you know, for all of Moonves's negatives, alleged negatives, let's say, he did see it. And he wanted to sell just the CBS part for like $50 billion.
Right.
And they probably could have got that, right? And, you know, at the time, because CBS was hitting on all cylinders back in 2017, 2018. And then, you know, the bottom fell out of the business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I don't know how this one finishes. Like, if you took a guess at it right now, what do you think the outcome is? She settles or not?
She settles.
You do. I do, too. I think she does.
I do it this week. And I think it's imminent. I mean, that's what I think. I just keep hearing. I mean, just the, I can't say that sources tell me that it's that she's settling. I don't have that level of detail, but I just I think, you know, based on everything I'm hearing, it's coming down the pike.
You know,
and it's going to be
up,
and it's going to be between 40 and 50. I think.
Wow. Okay. You listened.
He's not going to get a B. He's going to get an M, you know.
Well, he's, I always said if Trump comes back in, he's wrecking the place. He's wrecking Harvard. He's wrecking CBS News. But I wanted to ask you this question. I mean, you're a journalist. You're seeing all these books come out and all the, what they call the mainstream media. I mean, I don't include the New York Post in that. What's that?
I'm pretty mainstream, just to be honest with you.
I get it. No, I like the way you tie what the Wall Street guys are thinking and what's that going to look like in the political realm? What that looks across the board. You're really good at that. But the media. Right now, with them now writing all the books about, Joe Biden's cognitive decline, where they were a huge defender of it, saying like there was nothing to see here. You're not a doctor. This is just, fake. They were calling it, I don't know, when they would show a picture of Joe wandering, we call it a fake something. I forget. But.
Yeah, oh yeah, I forget because I got accused of that at one point.
Yeah,
they called it deep fake.
Yeah, a deep fake. Yeah, they kept calling meanwhile, everyone's watching it on their TV. I don't know how it was a deep fake, but this transition with the journalists, I have an opinion on it too, obviously. But what's your opinion of them now? Like, is it because the king is? Biden's got no more weapons. He's out. He had to get out. Yeah. So now they're just turning on him like dogs. Is that the case?
Yeah, I want to tell the viewers, the listeners, that this is not how what they're doing with these books. And I have no, I have no animus to Jake Tapper or the other guy, Alex Thompson, the latest two who wrote these books.
Yeah,
and they're probably nice guys. I don't know, but you know. This is not how journalism is supposed to be done. It's not supposed to be done like way after the fact. It's supposed to be done while the, while it's going on.
That's a good point.
While the damage is to prevent the damage, and the damage would have been Joe Biden getting reelected, which probably would have been even more monumentally bad for the country than even if Kamala Harris, who is obviously, not up for the job, just based on skill set.
Yeah.
She just can't answer. She can't handle policy questions. She was just never good at that.
Yeah.
She was good at being a politician. I mean, purely the art of getting elected. She was, okay. She was good at that. She was not good at, she's not a very learned, smart person. Contrast her to, Obama, contrast her to George W. Bush. I mean, I'm not saying he was, he was Churchill, but he thought about things. And even Trump is a pretty smart guy when you sit down and listen to him.
Oh, God, he can go up. But, I want to mention something about Kamala how far she got. I mean, there's a whole thing on that. Who wanted her there because of certain reasons? Some of the big influential people on the West Coast. But I really felt that she was so insecure in her own skin because maybe everything was handed to her. I don't know. Maybe
it was some of that. She she kind of like. Fell into the political thing, and we can get into
Yeah, I know that's a whole show.
Her former paramour and all that. I don't think we want to go there today. But she kind of fell into it. She benefited from identity politics, and that's huge in California, California political scene. So you put all that together, and she was never really tested. I remember when people come out of nowhere often they take on a big player and take them down through their sheer will. I mean, think about what Obama did. He took out the Clinton political machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that through did that through debating and
style
and style. So, he had these sort of obvious political strengths. George W. Bush was up against John McCain when John McCain was sort of a powerful political force. And, so remember all these, Ronald Reagan was battle tested. Nixon lost and won and lost. Donald Trump took out 17 people.
Oh.
I mean, out in like, you know what I mean? He just literally, his first time he was running against 17 people and he beat them. And he had like a bunch of them this time and beat them. So remember, she was never really tested like that. And when she was tested, she lost.
Yeah,
so that's the problem. But in any event, she was better than Joe Biden because Joe Biden was obviously mentally sick, both mentally and now physically. Unfortunately, he has prostate prostate cancer that's spreading, and so that cover up. To me, is a huge sin of the media. Now, here's the sort of absurdity of it all. It was so obvious that it was happening, and they would attack you for saying it was happening. And I would see it on social media. I'd get like I said something once, and some media watchdog came after me. And I wrote a story, and I don't cover Washington, the White House, right, per se. I cover it from an economic policy standpoint,
right?
But I'm not present. There's other people at the Post and at Fox that do that. And, I think Peter Ducey did a pretty good job of that.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. He was really good.
And I think, really good. And I think the Post did a good job at sort of covering the Biden, decline. I did a story about how, and this was in June 2023, so a full year before, a full 13 months before he resigned, that said, Wall Street is now starting to put out research reports that say that Biden's not going to make it. And that with every fall, you can look it up.
Charlie, I did look it up. And I kind of told my audience before, when I always set up my guests, that you listening to Wall Street, and you just brought it up, that 13 months before all this, Wall Street was saying to themselves, this guy doesn't look like he's going to make it, and this is how it might look. And then you reported that, and I actually went back and looked at it. It was very good. And Wall Street does make good predictions.
And yeah, but what was
at times
that they laid out what was fascinating, and I reported in the Post. What was fascinating is like how this research laid out the possibilities, exactly what would happen. If he does it before the end of 2023, they can have a convention. The longer he waits into 2024, that's when mayhem. I mean, he can do it literally a minute before their convention. But if he does that, it becomes problematic. And the longer he waits, the more, the less chance they have of having a real contest. I mean, I laid the whole thing out. Well, it wasn't me. I was quoting people. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened.
That's what happened.
And it was kind of, it's kind of eerie that Wall Street, and scary, that Wall Street could figure this out and game plan it. But the guys and gals that are every day in the media that are, covering it, just couldn't. And, the Wall Street Journal, which I used to work there, and they're a related paper to us. They're getting some kudos for, like a couple of weeks before Biden dropped out, writing a story that says he's not really with it. But that's a couple of weeks before he dropped out.
Yeah.
And that's like after the debate, or I can't remember if they did it before or after the debate. But you see what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, I do. I want to ask you something that, like, because what you're saying, and we mentioned Jake Tapper, and I just want to, he's a Philly guy, by the way. Originally, he grew up in Center City here, but I wondered why would Jake Tapper why would he defend what everyone else saw? This guy, Joe Biden, wasn't probably the smartest guy his whole life, but you could notice this decline. But when you, why now he's writing a book and exposing it, and you said perfectly, is your job is to start digging into this while it's happening, not after it's happened. That's what journalists do. But Jake Tapper, I looked at his resume. I always look at where people are from. It kind of tells me who they are and what they're about. Obviously, you know, life makes you change. But Tapper's whole life, and he was fighting hard against anyone who was bad-mouthing Trump's cognitive decline. Like, he was going after him on his show.
Biden's cognitive decline.
Yeah, who did I say?
Yeah, Trump.
No, not Trump. Biden's decline. Oh, my God. Thank you, Charlie. So, about Biden's mental decline. But when you look at Jake Tapper's resume, his first job, he was a PR for a very liberal congressperson to hear, a liberal woman. He's her PR person. Then he goes to Washington, D.C., and he works at a PR firm that just works for Democrats, spins for Democrats. Then he gets out. He writes for publications that are all on the left. Every part of his history, he probably grew up in a liberal home. Then he works in Democratic circles, left it not only working in them, he writes and defends and spins for them. So it's in his nature, while he's sitting at that big job on CNN, to spin for Biden through that whole time. But then he turns around and now he writes the book to tell us what actually happened. But his whole resume would say, yeah, that guy is going to just spin and turn it because that's all he's done his whole life. And you can't say that about every reporter, but I can say it about him because I look closely at his resume.
I don't know his background. I just want to say that he is a talented anchor. I don't want to sell him short. He's very talented. And, you know, he calls it straight at times. And I've seen him. I mean, listen, we've all were young and what did I say about neoconservative?
Yeah, you have a heart when you're young, and I think it was a Churchill quote, actually.
But neoconservatives were the former liberals who are mugged by reality.
Exactly.
I don't want to like sell short his sort of changes. And you know, I've watched him for years on CNN. He's not horrible. I mean, he's really good. Actually, he's a really good anchor. Here's the thing that I think is even bigger than what you laid out. There's something called regulatory capture that when people that worked in government, like at the Securities and Exchange Commission or the Federal Communications Commission, right?
Hey Charlie, let me ask you a thing. Do you want to, they're pressing me to go to commercial. You want to hang on, go into the next segment, or do you got to run? I know it's Memorial Day.
No, we could. Let's go into the next segment.
Okay. We're going to go to break. I'm going to be right back with Charlie Gasparino, Fox News correspondent.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Charlie Gasparino hung in there with me. He's going to come on for a little bit more. He hung on through the commercials for me. I appreciate that, Charlie. We were talking about Jake Tapper. I was kind of throwing him under the bus, and you started reeling me back in a little bit. So, which is always good. I need to be reeled back in every once in a while. And I don't disagree. He does handle his desk very professionally. But when I looked at his, you know what? You were picking up on something related to Jake, and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, I mean, I think the bigger issue is, you know, not where we stand, you know, start, it's where we end up. And here is one problem that you have when you cover institutions, okay? And it's a form of regulatory capture. I don't know if you ever heard this. I covered this because I covered the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is Wall Street's top regulator and Wall Street's top cop, they call it.
Right.
You know, bring cases against insider trading, you name it. It's the big thing. You read about them all the time.
Yep.
But sometimes they went easy on Wall Street. And why is that? Because a lot of them went to work for Wall Street. So it was called regulatory capture. And there's a degree of that in the Washington press corps. Listen, there's a degree of that of people who cover Wall Street. I mean, you know, we used to figure out how to get around it at the old Wall Street Journal when I covered Wall. I was one of the reporters who covered Wall Street.
Yep.
you know, there was a little bit of a good guy, bad guy thing that went on where, you know, one person had the access to the firm and maintained the access. The other person was, you know, did the hard story. So you basically fed the reader both sides of the story and kept everybody happy. But, you know, when everybody is in bed with the firm, you know, looking for handouts from the firm, you know, you don't serve the reader very well. And, right. And I think that's part of what's going on. Like, you do need access to the White House, theoretically, right? You don't want them, you know, Trump is throwing people out of the White House, right? That's kind of what's going on. And, you know, he's doing that because he wants people to be nice to them, right? So you go out of your, theoretically, you go out of your way to be nice to the Biden people because you want access to the Biden people because you do need to cover them. And that's kind of what happened. I mean, listen, it's a horrible thing. I never, just so you know, as someone who covered Wall Street, I was never particularly nice to anybody. I mean, I was professional, but I wasn't like, I didn't care if I was losing the handout story. You know what I'm saying?
Charlie, you wrote Go Woke, Go Broke, and everybody should go to on Amazon and get that book where Charlie covers DEI and ESG on Wall Street. I always said when I read this book, I was like, are these guys going to talk to Charlie Gasparino again? Because you called out names.
Yes, they are. They still are.
Yeah, that's
because
good.
In the end, you know, you got to deal with the person. You got to deal with the guy with the column. And, you know, that journalists sort of underestimate our power. So I think that's where, I mean, Alex Thompson, his co-writer, wrote apparently some very powerful pieces. But he also, if you went back to look at some of his tweets, he also sort of like tried to kiss up a little bit, saying, oh, well, you know, Republicans are doing this on the other hand. I mean, it was like a lot of on one hand, on the other hand stuff. So I think that's the problem with the D.C. press corps. You know, this whole thing, you know, maybe Jake and Alex Thompson are selling gazillion books and it won't matter. They'll be millionaires over this. But I really think they hurt the profession in many ways because it kind of just so exposed how, you know, just, you know, on top of everything else, on top of the Russian collusion BS that the New York Times won a Pulitzer on over a phony investigation, on top of COVID where we were told to separate out 6 feet. You couldn't go to church. You couldn't do anything. And by the way, it didn't come from a lab. It came from like someone eating a bat in China.
Yeah.
It didn't come from the lab that was working on the viruses. Yeah. That's racism. We were told that was racism. On top of, you know, placating radicals, you know, burning down Philly and all these inner cities over the death of a guy that, you know, I'm not saying he should die, but George Floyd wasn't exactly a model citizen. He was is a resisting arrest. We could go on and on.
No, I get it. We went through a time of insanity, like literally. If they think what's going on now with Trump is insane, no, what we just lived through insanity. Now we're like you did with me with Jake Tapper. We're trying to reel it back a little bit because,
but, you know, really unbelievable. So I remember being in my backyard. I thank God I'm a little older. I don't live in Manhattan anymore. When I mean, if I was in my 20s living in Manhattan in that lockdown environment, it would have lost my mind. But I have a little house in the country, and I'm sitting in my backyard with a beer in my hand, and I'm watching on my iPhone, you know, cities being burned down, you know, riots in Manhattan, and the news calling it largely peaceful protests. So on top of all that gaslighting of the American people, and by the way, on top of it all, you're all racist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And if you're a white guy, you can't get a job. You need points taken away from you because of DEI. On top of all, and this has all happened in real time. On top of all that gaslighting, you know, comes Trump. He wins because we were told that Biden was normal and he wasn't, or, you know, sentient and he wasn't. We were told that Kamala Harris was competent and she wasn't. And then comes this book that says, oh, you know, you were right all along.
That's the craziness of it. I tried to give an explanation of, you know, why he might do that, but that's it. Now comes the book and says, hey, you were right all along.
But that to me, like I said, he might make a lot of money on this book. I have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he will.
But guess what? He's destroying the profession.
No doubt about it.
People are going to, they don't look at journalists the same way. It's all fake. It's all bullshit. And excuse the language. And you can't get around that. And it's just like an exclamation point on that theory. And I think that's really bad because I kind of like this profession. I think there's a lot of good journalists out there. By the way, you ever watch local news? It's not so bad.
Yeah.
It just kind of covers great. You know what I'm saying? And we there's a lot of reporters that just want to that believe in doing their job, doing it well.
And here's
by the way,
there's a lot of other
newspapers.
There's a lot of other things to look at now, too. So they needed to get better, not get worse, because there's so many different news channels, meaning like using social media to get your news, that where they should have been upping their game, not lowering it, because there's so much more competition.
By the way, if you ever read Substack, which I read a lot, there's different Substack, like people, like really smart people do deep dives into really complex things.
Yes.
Where you really understand it. And it's fascinating that, you know, that mainstream media thinks they're going to be able to overcome all this incredible journalism that exists in these sort of non-traditional methods that's really good. And this is what kills me. And so I guess the biggest knock you could say on Tapper is, you know, why did he think he'd get away with it?
That's right. And you know what? I got to leave it at that. But that's the good thing, why he thought he would get away with it. But I want to thank Charlie Gasparino, senior correspondent for Fox Business Network, coming on and talking about the media and everything that what's going on today. So, Charlie, great having you again, always. Thank you.
Anytime. Talk soon.
Have a good Memorial Day. All right. That was Charlie Gasparino. We did a little focus on the media there. We were going to talk. There's a lot of things to talk with Charlie about, because what he's involved in as he's a financial reporter, but the financial stuff is it takes you into the politics. It takes you into the media. It takes you into the culture. And that's why I like bringing Charlie Gasparino on.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
I have something, and I'm going to try to, this is going to be a little bit rushed, but I like Tulsi Gabbard. There's something about her. I like the way she looks. I like her style. She's kind of like a cool, hippie, military woman. And I love that, you know, she is running the DNI. But, hey, Jimmy, let's just throw up that clip of Tulsi, and I'm going to try to get through this real quick before I got to go.
You remember very well, Will, the speech, the ominous speech that President Biden gave in 2022, where with this red background and Marines standing in the background, he issued an address to the nation warning the American people that Donald J. Trump and MAGA Republicans pose a direct threat to the fabric of our republic. And then you put that together with how the FBI and others within the Biden.
I'm going to pick up right what Tulsi was talking about, that, you know, that fiery red speech Biden gave, that half the country was bad and they needed to be stopped. So what Tulsi is going to, I think she's going to be releasing some documents that were circulated through the Biden administration. And it was basically the Biden administration was making recommendations to law enforcement, national law enforcement, FBI particularly, that we have to keep an eye on certain people. And these documents show that these certain people that they wanted to heighten their awareness of, because they could be domestic terrorists. And some of the people that were on this list were people who wanted to get their kids back in school. And this came out early in Biden's administration. And now we're going to get to see what they were saying to each other within the Biden administration, that this domestic extremism, the people that should be looked at were people opposed to the vaccine, people who didn't want to wear a mask, People who didn't want to take the vaccine in the military, give them an extra look. They could be extremists. People who were saying, even people who were saying we need to secure the border, even those type of people, these were the documents that were being pushed to federal law enforcement and to probably to federal attorneys, too. Federal prosecutors, like these people might be the problem, and we have to keep a very close eye on them. And now she's going to let some of this is going to let some of this all out. And if you wonder why that, because once it gets percolated at the top, then it starts filtering down to like local school districts, local police departments, like, hey, anybody coming in here to yell or anything, you know, we're getting warning from the federal government that these people could be violent domestic terrorists. Now, remember, Antifa and Black Lives Matter were burning down cities a year before, but this was a concerted effort by the Biden administration to apply, like, I guess they were like veiled threats and kind of getting the swamp or the bureaucracy like, hey, let's make sure we keep these people in line. So then what happens is that filters over to social media at the time, where social media is now getting these documents and this input that, listen, people that are talking about COVID vaccines being bad and not wearing the mask and the border, anybody talking along those lines, we're telling you as government officials right now, social media, you might not want to let them speak freely on your platforms because you don't want to be accused of helping domestic terrorists. And so now you're the people and who probably lean left at these social media platforms, and you're kind of like, yeah, wow, man, anyone talking about not listening to the government about COVID or screaming that their kids be back in school. You know what? Let's write the algorithm and let's make sure that we're not letting their message get out there, because the last thing we need, someone doing something and, you know, the federal government is going to blame us. And now all of a sudden they're going to seriously regulate us. But this is what's going to be good about the next few years. You're really going to start everything we were screaming and yelling about, which is true, just like Biden being in cognitive decline. Jake Tapper now agrees with us. You're going to see more and more of this come out about what they were doing underhandedly against us. But that's the show. I got to wrap it up. It was great being here for the 4 hours, Kale and Company. I'm sure they're going to be all back tomorrow. And we'll be turning it over to Lou Pate at 10 o'clock today. Have a great Memorial Day and think about all those people that made the ultimate sacrifice for us. Thank you.
Start your day with Kale and Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.